provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about cloud in CW3132, Frenis is a B2B market research company working with enterprises to optimize their campaigns with account and executive insights far beyond AI. Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're plunging into the latest insights from the cloud computing world, focusing on the top trends and insights we saw across LinkedIn over calendar weeks 31 and 32.
That's right. Our mission today is, well, to give you a shortcut to being really well informed on where the cloud narrative is truly evolving. We're moving beyond those sort of abstract discussions to pinpoint the actionable choices for enterprises like yours. We'll explore how providers are adapting, how buyers are prioritizing, and you know what this all means for your immediate and long-term cloud strategy. It's a fascinating, complex shift.
So let's unpack this. What immediately stands out from the LinkedIn insights is this, well, almost seismic shift around digital sovereignty, regulation, and compliance. This isn't just about ticking boxes anymore, is it? Especially for European enterprises, it feels like something much deeper.
You're absolutely right. It's fundamentally about strategic control and risk. The core concern highlighted by people like Marcel Wortschaftig and James Collis is the very real legal exposure to U.S. jurisdiction.
Right, the U.S. Cloud Act.
Exactly. Think about the U.S. Cloud Act. That's the law allowing U.S. law enforcement to compel tech companies for data, regardless of where it's physically stored. So even if your data is in a European data center, this act could potentially grant foreign authorities access. And that's a significant issue.
Yeah, a huge issue.
Especially when you hear Microsoft candidly admitting its cloud can't guarantee full sovereignty under U.S. law. This isn't just, you know, a legal footnote. It's a strategic imperative. It impacts market access, continuity, customer trust.
And it seems the major providers are definitely feeling this pressure and responding. We saw AWS framing its European sovereign cloud as a direct answer to those EU data residency expectations. Meenakshi Srivastava and Artin Subasi clearly pointed this out. So how are they trying to address this fundamental concern?
Well, AWS has committed that its European sovereign cloud will be operated exclusively by EU citizens from EU locations and entirely under EU law. Figures like Barbara Bayens and Tomasz Staszlewski really emphasize this point strongly.
Okay, sounds pretty comprehensive.
It does, right. But it's crucial to acknowledge Artun Sabasi's analogy. He called it the Swiss cheese model.
Swiss cheese.
Yes, suggesting that despite all these layers of protection, there might still be a residual risk, you know, a small hole. So enterprises still need to ask those tough questions about true data isolation and operational independence.
That's a great analogy, actually. So while AWS is focusing on that European-only operation, what about Microsoft? Are they tackling sovereignty from a different angle?
Microsoft's strategy, which folks like Douglas Phillips and Jeff Kisner shared insights on, involves its sovereign private cloud. This offering is really designed for controlled, independent operations, even for disconnected use cases.
Disconnected, okay.
Yeah, their aim is maximum reliability and autonomy, particularly for governments and highly regulated industries, giving them an environment that can run almost entirely in isolation.
And here's where it gets really interesting, isn't it? Beyond what the big U.S. players are offering, there are these growing calls for Europe to develop its own homegrown cloud champion. Enrico Signoretti explored this, looking at that tricky balance between strategic autonomy and staying competitive globally.
Yeah, and it's not just talk. Ewald Having, for instance, offered very practical advice. He urged companies to start small experiments with European cloud providers now.
Start small.
Right. The idea is to begin mitigating that long-term reliance on U.S. hyperscalers. Take pragmatic steps today to avoid potential lock-in or, you know, future compliance headaches.
However, some voices, like Michael Manton, are cautioning strongly against cloud washing. They're demanding very explicit definitions of what truly constitutes a sovereign construct. You need that clarity to ensure genuine independence, right? What exactly counts as sovereign seems key.
Precisely. And this leads straight into differing viewpoints on balancing sovereignty with competitive advantage. Benjamin Herman, for example, argued that prioritizing what he termed ideological purity might actually cost enterprises access to cutting-edge AI.
Ah, the innovation trade-off.
Exactly. It forces a real choice between absolute control and the innovative power you get from globally scaled cloud services.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, Harry Milonis made a great point. It feels like this whole battle for digital sovereignty is shifting. It's moving away from traditional tariffs on goods towards regulations embedded directly into cloud architecture itself.
That's a key takeaway. It really underlines the depth of this shift. Now, moving on to a different, but let's face it, equally pressing challenge. cost optimization, and FinOps.
Ah, yes, the bills.
We're seeing a significant amount of overspend. Victor Garcia highlighted that this often stems from, maybe surprisingly, weak cost awareness and pretty limited cross-team communication.
Yeah, I've heard that repeatedly. Victor Garcia identified some specific cloud budget killers that really resonate. Teams deploying without a clue about the cost, AI workloads just spiraling, and Kubernetes bills getting out of hand.
Ouch.
But it's not all doom and gloom. He also mentioned practical solutions like Cloud Throttle. And Christian Melendez pointed to using Gravicon instances, those custom processors, combined with Spot instances for potentially big Kubernetes savings. These aren't just tech fixes, they're strategic choices.
And what's fascinating here, I think, is that FinOps maturity is increasingly seen as this profound cultural and operational transformation. It's not just about buying new tools.
Right.
Stephen Davison emphasized the convergence of SAM, Software Asset Management, ITAM, IT Asset Management, and FinOps. Essentially, managing your licenses and your IT gear is becoming inherently linked with optimizing cloud spend.
All connected.
All connected. And it all needs a clear target operating model to avoid chaos. It's about aligning people, process, and technology.
And we're certainly seeing providers respond with their own solutions. Nicholas Fondrini, for instance, highlighted how Oracle Cloud Infrastructure's FinOps stack promotes transparency, automation, and crucially, policy-driven spend control, trying to offer that predictable path.
Yeah, this really reinforces the broader narrative shift we're seeing. It's no longer just about that initial cloud adoption, the lift and shift. Now the focus is continuous strategic optimization and right-sizing. Dion Yordanoff and Tanya Federko both noted this trend, especially for GenAI workloads where, let's be honest, cost-aware scaling is absolutely critical for viability.
Okay, let's shift gears again. Let's talk about the strategic importance of partnerships and ecosystem developments. We're seeing some really significant moves here designed to strengthen the landscape, particularly in specific regions.
Absolutely. A real standout was, in Canada, the announcement by OpenText and TELUS of a new sovereign AI cloud.
Sovereign AI. Interesting.
Yeah, Darren Entwistle and Alison Clark expressed a lot of excitement about this. It's specifically focused on maintaining national control over AI development and data, right there within Canadian borders.
And we saw other notable collaborations too, like Phoenix Technologies and Red Hat teaming up on sovereign solutions that incorporate confidential computing. Johan Robinson shared that. Seems security and sovereignty are really intertwining in these partnerships.
Definitely. And what's interesting is how these partnerships are designed for specific outcomes. NTT Data, for example, formed a global Microsoft cloud unit. Sudhir Chaturvedi and Leroy Kautz highlighted their emphasis is squarely on delivering tangible AI and security outcomes for clients, not just tech for tech's sake.
And Google Cloud and Capgemini are clearly positioning their collaborations as real transformation partnerships. Veland Holfelder pointed out it's way beyond simple migrations now. It's about deeper strategic alignment for innovation.
Which raises an important question. How do companies actually make money, get incremental revenue from these complex partnerships? Ira Oren, referencing insights from Brian Kane, highlighted co-selling agreements and leveraging marketplaces as key engines for driving that revenue.
Okay.
Collaboration across the sales funnel.
Makes sense. Okay, next up, let's dive into the evolving world of hybrid and private cloud, telco and edge cloud, and of course, the ever-present paramount topic of security.
Right. Enterprises are definitely leaning into hybrid strategies, and often that now includes workload repatriation, actually bringing some workloads back from public cloud to private environments.
Really? Moving stuff back?
Yeah. Rasheen W. shared an insight suggesting something like 69% of enterprises are now considering moving workloads back. Reasons? Performance, control, cost effectiveness. It's not always a one-way street to public cloud.
And this brings us to the real-world impact of big vendor changes, like, you know, the whole VMware and Broadcom situation. Michael Rebman provocatively asked if building a sovereign cloud on VMware, now owned by Broadcom, is still a wise decision.
Oof.
That kind of shift can really prompt a fundamental rethink of private cloud roadmaps, can't it?
Absolutely. It's a critical point about managing vendor risk and long-term control. And related to that, Microsoft's sovereign private constructs are really designed to reinforce that mission-critical independence, especially for the public sector, allowing operations even if disconnected.
We're also seeing interesting developments with telcos showing strong cloud outcomes without necessarily migrating everything wholesale. Bell Canada, for example, built data pipelines to the cloud for AI-driven automation, but kept their core network stuff on-prem. Danielle Rios shared that.
smart hybrid approach.
Exactly. And Yuvraj Romani highlighted Airtel Digital launching a telecom-backed cloud alternative in India, focusing on cost-effective scale, basically challenging the global giants with a localized offering.
Now, when it comes to security, there's this ongoing debate. Practitioners like Jetro Alice argue that a well-configured public cloud can actually surpass on-prem security because of the hyperscalers' immense resources, continuous monitoring. But, and this is crucial, he stressed, well-configured is the key qualifier. Misconfigurations are still the real danger, unfortunately, wherever your data lives.
That's a powerful and practical point. Configuration is king. And we're seeing confidential computing emerge more as a baseline for sensitive, regulated workloads, like that Phoenix Technologies and Red Hat collaboration we mentioned, protecting data even while it's being processed.
Yeah.
Plus, Orange Business secured a key qualification for its Cloud Avenue platform, reinforcing control and security for its customers. Benjamin Vigouroux shared that.
But, you know, despite all these advances, risks remain, and it's vital to keep a clear eye on that. Alexandra Lancy shared a really cautionary tale. AWS apparently deleted a 10-year account and all its data without warning.
Wow, seriously?
Yeah, it's a jarring story, but it illustrates the very real risks of putting all your eggs in one cloud basket. It underscores the absolute importance of having robust exit strategies and multi-cloud resilience. Vague Stefan Bhatiyankam also strongly advises on this.
Yeah, a stark reminder to plan ahead. And speaking of continuous innovation, Matt Leonard highlighted OCI Edge Cloud introducing new hardware with AMD EPYC processors, bringing enhanced performance and security right to the edge. So innovation isn't just in the core cloud.
Good point. Finally, let's look quickly at regional and provider positioning, what we might call the global race for local relevance. Major providers are clearly signaling expanded AI and cloud capacity investments in specific regions. Oracle, for example, announced a huge $2 billion investment in Germany. Tobias Demmel shared that. It's about localizing the whole ecosystem.
And Microsoft is also underlining its Canadian data center expansion. Vicky Makija highlighted this is about meeting local compliance and performance needs. Global strategy, yes, but with a very sharp focus on local requirements.
Right. And Open Telecom Cloud, too, is actively promoting its European public cloud stance. Thorsten Bowles noted their emphasis on strong data protection and AI capabilities, really trying to differentiate based on that European identity.
Mm. And we're seeing smaller, specialized European vendors like Evoilà GmbH positioning these embedded sovereignty-ready services. Guy Bartram shared how they're tailoring solutions specifically for highly regulated industries, bespoke for local needs.
And what's really interesting is the progress in places like the UAE with its national hypercloud. Jevin George and Fahad Al-Hassawi discussed how this solidifies the UAE's commitment to local data stewardship and regulatory alignment, a big push for national control.
And Mauro Capo explored how new operating models for sovereign AI clouds are focusing on localized AI under national control. It reflects that broader trend of bringing AI infrastructure and its power much closer to home.
So to sort of recap this deep dive, the cloud market continues to evolve incredibly rapidly. Digital sovereignty. It's no longer niche. It's becoming a key differentiator, a fundamental driver of strategy. It requires that delicate balance between leveraging global scale and ensuring local control. And the insights from these past weeks clearly show the focus is now squarely on executable choices, not just, you know, theory.
If you enjoyed this deep dive, new editions drop every 2 weeks. Also check out our other editions on ICT and tech, digital products and services, artificial intelligence, and sustainability and green ICT. Thank you for joining us. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on more critical insights.